I don't believe I've told you yet, but I was named manager of the Pirates. Well, technically not manager, but coach of a 9 to 11-year-old Little League team. Welcome to In the Bullpen with Mark Dewey, sponsored by Developing Contenders Ministries. You're listening to the Fight Laugh Feast Network. Thank you for joining us.
And look who's coming up. High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
Over the past few weeks, I have seen far more amateur baseball than professional baseball. I've been at the fields watching, on the field coaching young boys. I've had practices, games, and on Saturday, I even umpired a game. And that's because I'm coaching a group of 9 to 11-year-olds on the Abingdon Pirates. Also during this time, I've been able to watch some local high school baseball. And even though most of my time and attention has been focused on what's happening in amateur baseball here where I live, in the southwest part of Virginia, I've still had some time to see what's going on out there in Major League Baseball, and I hope in the weeks to come in Minor League Baseball as well. And that's because I'm a fan of the game. I'm a fan of the game at all levels. And I appreciate good baseball and good baseball players regardless of their age. As a Christian, we are to speak the truth in love. And I believe that means, as it regards the game of baseball, as it regards baseball players, that when we have concerns, we express those concerns. When we see the game or somebody involved in the game going in a direction that leads to a dead end, or even worse, leads to driving off a cliff if they don't stop, love demands that we say something about it. I have, and Lord willing, I will continue to do so. However, it also means that we are to be appreciative of the good in the game itself, and those who are involved in it. We're to be thankful to the Lord for blessing us with the greatest game on planet Earth and the ability to watch people who play the game well. So Friday, I actually did get to see a Major League Baseball game, not in person, but on television, and it was Atlanta playing at home against the Guardians. As a rule, the games that I watch in their entirety or close to it are typically Braves games because my two youngest sons are Braves fans. And so when we're going to watch a game, if the Braves are on, that's typically the game we're going to watch. Well, I surely wasn't disappointed in doing so on Friday because I got a chance to see Chris Sale dominate. He gave up a leadoff home run to begin the game, but then pitched 7 innings that were outstanding. Great stuff. And he retired, I believe it was the last 20 batters that he faced. One of the things I've noticed since really last year in watching Braves games is how good their approach is at the plate. Kevin Seitzer, in my opinion, has done a great job as their hitting coach. And what I noticed again on Friday is it seems to be even better with runners in scoring position. So far in this season, the Braves aren't hitting home runs like they did last season. I'm guessing that's going to change, but that's been the case so far. And yet they're able to get the runner in without the home run, and they've been winning a lot of baseball games. One of the guys on that team that is off to a slow start, especially in the power department, is one of my favorite players to watch, Ronald Acuña Jr. Again, I anticipate that slow start will be forgotten by the time the season's over, probably by the All-Star break. Another one of my favorite players to watch in Major League Baseball, I have not been able to watch yet in a game situation. I've been able to see highlights. But given everything that has surrounded him really since the end of last season, he continues to amaze me with what he is able to do. Shohei Ohtani is the man I'm talking about. And you may recall that it was rumored, and I'd say beyond a rumor, it was reported far and wide that last offseason he was on a plane headed to Toronto to sign with the Blue Jays. That, of course, didn't happen. He signed with the Dodgers. Well, the Dodgers traveled to Toronto last week to play the Blue Jays. And before his first at-bat, Shohei Ohtani was booed mercilessly by the Blue Jays fans. And then he promptly did this.
On 1-1, high fly ball, deep right field, Shohei in Toronto, into the bullpen. Boo that! A 1-0 lead for the Dodgers, number 7 for Ohtani.
First of all, even without pitching, which he will not do this year, he is still one of the more exciting players to watch in Major League Baseball. But here's the other thing. It's not only his ability, which is phenomenal, but his ability to focus is also remarkable. Consider again, since the end of last year, finding out that he needed Tommy John, the whole free agency thing, going to the Dodgers, the whole thing with his translator. Think about everything that has gone on. And yet he is off to an outstanding start offensively. His focus, his ability to block out all the distractions is remarkable. And that sets apart those who are great from those who are good. It sets apart those who are good from those who are not so good. It sets it apart at the major league level. It sets it apart at the 9 to 11-year-old level. And that kind of focus, that kind of ability to block out distractions, that's something you cannot teach. Interestingly, in a kind of strange place, at the NFL draft, Nick Saban made some comments about not being able to teach certain things and used baseball as a primary illustration. Listen to what he had to say.
Because you can teach a guy how to swing a baseball bat. You can teach him what the strike zone is. But you can't teach him whether it's a good pitch to hit when it leaves the pitcher's hand and gets the home plate. There's some kind of athletic intuition that comes in that. Just like if you're playing defensive back. Do you go and intercept the ball? Do you swat and hook the guy? Do you break down and tackle him? You can teach him how to do all those things, but you can't really teach him when to do it, because it happens so fast. So that's where the instincts and athletic intuition come in to separate players. What makes a great hitter in baseball versus an average hitter? It's athletic intuition. It's being able to eye-hand coordinate and know the timing of how you got to do things. And when we keep talking about guys who are instinctive, they're making the right decisions at the right time to make the plays.
That is some outstanding stuff right there from Nick Saban. I find it interesting that a football guy at the NFL draft brings in baseball. Makes me like the guy even better. So, he talked about instincts. He talked about athletic intuition. You can call it what you will, but as he said, you cannot teach that. You cannot teach it to a big leaguer. You cannot teach it to a little leaguer. However, I believe you can interfere with it. And so whether you're coaching a big leaguer or a little leaguer, be careful. Something else I had the opportunity and privilege to do last week was to talk baseball with a huge baseball fan. Chris Vitale had me on as a guest with his podcast, Totally Baseless. And we had a wonderful conversation about baseball. Part of the conversation included the difference between the AAA level of professional baseball and the major league level. And we talked about the mental and physical differences between those two levels. That success at the AAA level doesn't necessarily equate to success at the major league level. And we talked about some of the reasons why. After I had that conversation with him and after that podcast dropped, I read either Friday or Saturday that Jackson Holliday, the 20-year-old rookie, was optioned from Baltimore to their AAA team in Norfolk. Now, Jackson Holliday, as you likely know, was the number one pick in the 2022 draft. He is the consensus number one prospect in baseball. Last year, he played from A-ball through AAA and had a slash line of .323, .442, .499. This year, in spring training, big league spring training camp, he had a slash line of .311, .354, .600. He began the season in AAA, spent 2 weeks there, played in 10 games, and his slash line there was .333, .482, .595. So he has done everything to deserve a call-up to the big leagues. He got that call-up, and he spent 10 games or played 10 games with the Orioles. In those 10 games, he had 36 plate appearances. He struck out 18 times. He had only two hits, both singles, two walks. His slash line in those 10 games, 059, 111, 059. This young man has tremendous pedigree, both physically and mentally, because of who his father is and his grandfather is. He undoubtedly has those instincts, that athletic intuition. Just keep in mind, this game is not easy. And in particular, hitting at the big league level is not easy. Now, I fully expect that Jackson Holliday is going to return to the big leagues and have a very long, very productive, very successful major league career. And if that proves to be true, and I believe it will, he will not be the first player. He almost likely will not be the last player to struggle, to be sent down, and then to come back up and have an outstanding career. But there are big differences. Sometimes those differences are more easily worked through. Sometimes they take a little longer. But there is a big difference between playing at AAA and playing in the major leagues. Now, yesterday, I didn't get a chance to watch baseball, but I listened to the game between the Tigers and the Royals. And Tarek Skubal, the left-handed starting pitcher for the Tigers, dominated for seven innings. And he had some really, really good stuff. And I listened to the radio broadcast, so I listened to my friend Dan Dickerson, who does the play-by-play, and then his color commentator, Andy Dirks. And they were both talking about the fact that with Tarek Skubal, we have something very special. And right now, he's 4-0 on the season with a 1.72 ERA. Again, a young man that I've been able to watch kind of sporadically, but I look forward to being able to sit down and actually watch a whole game that he pitches. There's another man who I haven't had a chance to watch pitch, just highlights, who many are recognizing as a very special talent on the mound.
Darren Jones looking like $1 million.
This kid is impressive.
He's got six.
Wow, this is
absolutely crazy.
This is awesome.
We're seeing something special here in Jared Jones.
So you heard the name, Jared Jones, a starting pitcher for the Pittsburgh Pirates. In that clip, you heard two broadcast teams. The first, Gary Cohen and Ron Darling with the Mets. The second, Greg Brown and Bob Walk with the Pirates. So you have two longtime broadcasters, Gary Cohen and Greg Brown, and then two ex-Major League pitchers who were very good and now have become longtime broadcasters, Ron Darling and Bob Walk. And you heard the praise that they were giving to this young man. And it is definitely well-deserved. Now, he started yesterday in San Francisco against the Giants, and based on what he's done so far this year, he quote-unquote struggled. He went five innings, gave up six hits, three earned runs, one walk, three strikeouts. But on the season, he has been dominating. And watching him, his stuff is electric. And what I really like is he trusts it. He attacks the zone with it. Sometimes you'll see people with good stuff that don't trust their stuff. Or good stuff, and then they want to nibble. They want to get everybody to swing and miss on every pitch by having him chase. What I can tell from Jared Jones, he's got the electric stuff and he attacks the zone with it. And he gets a lot of swings and misses in the strike zone and then also chases outside of the strike zone. Two things that are indicative of guys that are very successful. Something else I noticed is that his pitch counts in each of his starts have been very good and his strike percentage has been quite high. So this is another person I hope to watch more as the weeks go on. And I've already appreciated his talent, but I want to watch him more in a game setting and not just highlights. Now, I don't know whether it's because I've been watching so much amateur baseball, whether it was my conversation with Chris Vitale, or what I've been able to see and follow in Major League Baseball, or a combination of it all. But whatever it is, it got me to thinking about appreciating the Major League Baseball players I had the privilege of playing with in my career. And it's been almost 30 years since my Major League Baseball career ended. And one of the things that, I don't know if I want to use the word guilty, but one of the things that I did that I wish I hadn't done, when I was playing, I was so focused on what I needed to do to help our team win that I don't think I appreciated the game or my teammates from a fan standpoint. I appreciated them as human beings, But I think I was so focused on doing my job that I didn't sit back and say, man, these guys are something special. I mean, I knew all big league players are. And so all of that is said to say this. Over the next several weeks, and I don't know if I'll do it every single week, but I will do it over the next several weeks, I'm going to go position by position, and I'm going to give you my view on the best of the best that I played with. Those that I consider to have had the greatest careers in Major League Baseball that I had the privilege of being teammates with. And so today, I'm going to start out with pitcher. Really, pitchers. I'm going to talk about a starting pitcher and a relief pitcher. And then in the weeks to come, I'll work through catcher, first base, second base, and the like. So when I first got called up to the big leagues, it was 1990 with the San Francisco Giants. There were two pitchers on that team, starting pitchers, that were at the end of very long and successful major league careers. Don Robinson and Rick Rushel. Very, very good pitchers. Another veteran pitcher that I played with right at the end of his career was Bob Walk. Matter of fact, in 1993, Bob Walk was my teammate with the Pirates. In 1994, I was still with the Pirates. Bob Walk went to the broadcast booth, and he's been there since. But when I look at starting pitchers, I really have to look at the team I played on in 1992, the New York Mets. Here were the four starters that were there the whole year. Sid Fernandez, a man that during his time often led all pitchers in baseball with the highest strikeouts per nine innings pitched and the lowest hits allowed per nine innings pitched. Also on that team, Doc Gooden. Now, I got to the Mets and played with Doc after he had the shoulder issues. He may even had a shoulder surgery. Of course, some of the off-field issues. And just as an aside, talk about a great human being. I remember after meeting Doc, being around Doc, I thought to myself, if I was Doc Gooden, if I was as good as he was at such a young age in the city of New York, I can't even imagine what that would have been like. Doc's just a great guy. So that was a second guy. A third guy on that team, though he got traded toward the end of the season to the Blue Jays, was David Cone. And then a fourth pitcher on that team was Brett Saberhagen. Now, he had an injury, I think, on his finger, maybe the middle finger of his throwing hand. I can't remember. It's been a while. But think about those four guys, Sid Fernandez, Doc Gooden, David Cone, Brett Saberhagen. And I'm going to have to go with this. Number two on my list of who I consider to have had the greatest careers for a starting pitcher that I played with, I got to go with David Cone. Now, you might say, okay, well, who's number one? Well, I actually haven't mentioned his name yet. And as I was thinking through this at first, this person didn't come to my mind as the one I would list as number one. But when I took everything into account, I had to choose this man as the best career, the greatest starting pitcher that I had the opportunity to play the game with.
Two pitch. He struck him out in the Red Sox win. Congratulations to Tim Wakefield. He's a 200-game winner.
Fans here at Fenway tonight, and just about all of them have stayed to see you come out here for your 200th win. How special is this moment?
It's very special. It's definitely been worth the wait, and I'm so grateful that I was able to do it in front of our home crowd here.
Seasons of professional baseball, did you ever think you would become one of the 89 pitchers in the modern league era to get 200 wins?
Not at all. It never even crossed my mind, but I'm very grateful again that it happened in this uniform, in front of this crowd, looking around over the past month and a half and seeing all these signs. You guys really know how to make somebody really feel loved, and I'm very grateful to everybody that stayed and rooted me on, all the signs. And my teammates are all out here. That shows the character of our team right there.
And by the way, it shows something about the character of Tim Wakefield as well. I mentioned the fact that we should be appreciative, thankful. You heard Tim Wakefield was most appreciative, most thankful of the fans in Boston, his teammates in Boston. Now, when I first saw Tim Wakefield, I was with the Mets in 1992. And that was the year in which he was absolutely dominant. Well, then in 1993, I went to the Pirates. and Wake was struggling hard and actually spent much of the year in the minor leagues. He came up in 93 and had a couple of really good starts at the end of the year. I was back with the Pirates in 1994. Wake did not make the big league team out of spring training, never came to the big leagues, and was released in 1994. What he overcame and what he accomplished after that point is remarkable. 19 years in the big leagues, from 1995 until 2011, and by the way, that 200th victory came against the Toronto Blue Jays on September 13, 2011. He had 200 wins right on the nose with more than 2,000 strikeouts. He is considered one of the all-time great Boston Red Sox pitchers. Great career. Like I said, at first, that name didn't come to my mind. I mean, it came into my mind as, okay, he's going to be one of the front runners. But the more I thought about it, I thought, you know what? With the greatness of Doc Gooden for a time, of Brett Saberhagen, of the lengthy greatness of a David Cohn, I got to go with Tim Wakefield. Now turning to the bullpen. Again, when I was called up in 1990, there was a reliever, the closer for the Giants at the time, Steve Bedrosian. Bedrock won a Cy Young in 1987 with the Phillies. He has to rake up there. But number two on my list for relievers I played with is Rod Beck. And Shooter's been making his rounds in the last couple of days on social media, people talking about him. Now, Rod Beck got traded to the Giants in the spring of 1988. And so Rod Beck and I played that season in Clinton, Iowa, low A together. We played high A together. We played double A together. We played in triple A together. Then I left the Giants for a time. Then I came back in 95, 96. We played in the big leagues together. And I say, I have said, and I will continue to say, that I believe that Rod Beck was the best closer for a time in the mid-90s, 93 to 96, 93 to 97, somewhere in that area. And he finished just shy of 300 saves in his career. But he's number two. For me, the best of the best as it regards relievers is this guy.
Nice story. Left-hander John Franco, born and brought up Brooklyn, New York. Played his collegiate ball at St. John's. And could save his 400th game at Shea Stadium. Great story.
That was number 400. He went on to save 424 games. He is sixth all-time on the saves list in Major League Baseball history, and he is first all-time for left-handed pitchers. So he's my number one reliever that I had the privilege of playing baseball with. So next up, next week, I'm not sure, but next up will be the catching position. I guess that I'm having kind of a fan appreciation series here as I go through these guys I had the privilege of playing with. And I'll say this, as a pitcher, former pitcher, as a former pitching coach, there is nobody on the field I appreciated more and appreciate still to this day more than catchers. And I played with a bunch of good ones and a few great ones. But who is the best in my view? Well, on the one hand, I think that's easy. On the other hand, there's more to it than meets the eye. But that's a conversation for another day. Join us next time for In the Bullpen on the Fight, Laugh, Feast Network. Thank you for listening.